Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
This is Yannick Noah.
Hi, this is Andy Brown from London, and you're listening to the absolutely fabulous Tennis Podcast.
Well, thank you very much, Andy from London. Wonderful intro to our show today. And if you would like to be introducing a show in 2022, you can do so when we launch our next round of crowdfunding. I say crowdfunding, it's all going to be a bit different this next time. We'll tell you about that next week.
Oh, a tease, David. 30 seconds into the pod.
Yeah. However, rest assured, we will still be doing shout-outs, we'll still be doing intros, we'll still be doing pet mascots, all the rest of it. And if you want to have a reminder when we launch all of that in early December, go to our show notes and you can have a link there and we'll send you a reminder if you stick your email address in. But anyway, thank you to Andy, because it is at the stage where the WTA Finals semi-finals are complete. And that's why we're back, Matt, because we've had a few days. I have to say, I don't know about you, I'm slightly struggling to keep across when we're supposed to do podcasts at the moment, because we wake up to two matches having played at the WTA Finals, and then 2 hours later, after we've recorded the podcast, the ATP Finals starts in Turin. Oh dear, we've spent about half an hour this morning just trying to work out when we should record podcasts. So every other day is more or less the plan, but it's messing with my mind. Thank goodness we got yours as backup.
Yeah, there are very few windows in the day to actually record a podcast when there's not tennis happening because of the two time zones. But yes, every other day we will be here for the rest of this week covering both events.
Okay. Well, right. Well, we'll start with the WTA Finals and let you know what the semi-finals lineup is. And it is going to be Garbiñe Muguruza against Paula Badosa. And it is going to be Maria Sakkari against Annette Contaveit. We will tell you about everything that went on overnight and on the night before in those matches in just a minute. But before that, I've just got to draw your attention to some sorcery from Matt Roberts in our newsletter. We do like to blow our own trumpets here on the Tennis Podcast when we get something right.
Sometimes you have to,
and it's such a rare occurrence in my case that I take every advantage when I can. But this from Matt is quite extraordinary. In the last newsletter from a few days ago, just before the WTA Finals started up, Matt wrote a WTA Finals preview in the newsletter, and he wrote the following. The four players I think will reach the semi-finals are Paula Badosa, Maria Sakkari, Annette Contaveit, and Garbiñe Muguruza. I mean, what? Frankly, it all feels like guesswork until we see how they adapt to the conditions. Well, not guesswork for you, but I've gone with players who I think can battle through hardship. I'm also hoping that Badosa, and in particular Muguruza, with her Latin American roots, not South American, David, feed off the crowd's support and energy. I mean...
Nailed it.
That's... It's as though you've cheated or something. as though you've come back from the future and just sort of done the newsletter with complete hindsight.
I mean, newsletter readers will know that I am last in our predictions competition for the year. I've had a shocker. I mean, I've not got one right for months. And the irony is I've made four predictions here, got them all right, don't get any points for them whatsoever. Mm. But do you know, I mean, often I look at a WTA draw and I have absolutely no idea what is going to happen. I mean, it's easy to say in hindsight. I actually felt fairly confident about those predictions, just given where Krejcikova was, given where Sabalenka was. Pliskova, I didn't think, would really relish these conditions. And Świątek was a real unknown. I wasn't sure. I almost put Świątek in, I suppose. But yeah, I think we've had some good matches. We've had some exciting matches. But it has panned out how I thought it would.
Amazing. Amazing. We've reached that stage, but with it being the final group stage of the WTA finals, where you get that kind of all or nothing feel to the matches. When it was Sakkari against Sabalenka last night and it was winner take all, the winner goes into the semis, the loser goes home, you cannot avoid that match. You need to rearrange your life in order to see that match. Whereas the other one, Badosa against Świątek, with everybody knowing that Badosa was already qualified and Świątek couldn't qualify. I didn't even bother watching that. I don't know what happened. I mean, I know it was 7-5, 6-4. I didn't watch it. It was an irrelevance, really, in terms of what goes on. Is that how you feel? I mean, do you just watch them all anyway, if you can?
I would have watched it if there was nothing else on, but of course, with the ATP finals happening at the same time, I ended up watching Tsitsipas Rublev, which was on at exactly the same time last night.
That's infuriating. I mean, both of them starting at 8 o'clock UK time.
Yeah, I know. It just sort it out. But yes, yeah, so no, I didn't watch Badosa Świątek either. I know, you know, it was, I think it was Badosa's birthday, wasn't it? And she was in this awkward position of knowing she was through and knowing that her match was the next day, her semi-final, no day off. So I think from the sound of things, it was quite a physical match. You know, the second set in particular, there was some grueling games in it. But I think, you know, not the worst thing in the world for Badosa that it didn't get stretched to three sets.
Physically, yes. But I always think this is a really tough position for the player who's won two and is through already. We've seen it so many times in London at the ATP finals. And you've got this player who's coming out, and I remember Nadal once being in this position, and there's no chance he's going to be able to kind of give a sort of 75% effort, is there? You know, I mean, do you remember that one where I think Andy Murray played a couple of times in the third rubber, having already qualified, and then just the competitive juice is kicking in and him just absolutely destroying himself ahead of the semi-final that he'd already qualified for.
Yeah, it's not an ideal situation, is it? And actually, we had a little bit of it in Muguruza Kontaveit. Kontaveit was already through. The interesting thing there was Muguruza had to win that match to get through to the semi-finals. So there was something on the line, but I think I said in the last pod, I wonder how Kontaveit is going to handle that, you know, because suddenly this is a match without any pressure on, where she's been playing matches with loads of pressure on for months. And very notably, her performance dipped. It was the worst match she's played for weeks. You know, without that need to win, it's kind of impossible to give your absolute best. But yeah, it's the problem with round robin, frankly.
Yeah. Which is, you know, we've given it a bit of a big up this week because we had the good side of it early on when Świątek lost early and then got her chance, and Sabalenka as well, and then their chance to really show what they're made of in the next match and all the rest of it. But yeah, last night was the last two nights, not great, really. I mean, there've been some highlights which we'll get on to. But I mean, just to cover off what else went on, Karolina Pliskova. What a sentence this is. Karolina Pliskova lost the first set 6-love. So that actually made it two consecutive 6-love sets that she'd lost, because Pliskova had lost the second set in her match against Kontaveit, the previous round-robin match as well. And then she came back and she beat Barbora Krejcikova. So she's won love 6 and then won the next two sets. But both of them were eliminated. So what a waste of time that was. I mean, round robin. Honestly.
Yeah, it was sort of the worst of Pliskova in the first set. You know, not even moving her feet and losing 6-love. And then the best of her, she fought with everything she had to give herself a chance to qualify. She had to win. She did win. And then Muguruza went and won in the evening anyway, so her comeback was in vain against Krejcikova, and they were both eliminated.
I can kind of relate to Pliskova not bothering to move her feet. I play tennis once a week, and if I can reach a ball just by leaning over and extending one of my long arms,
which you can normally,
I'm going to do that. Yeah. I'm going to bother moving my feet. Anyway, let's talk about the one match that really had something on it, the winner take all match last night between Maria Sakkari and Aryna Sabalenka. And I mean, it wasn't great all the way through by any means. It was the third set. I mean, they shared the first two sets on tie breaks. Now, Sabalenka led both of those sets with a break of serve. So really, she will have regrets. She really should have won the match overall. But in the third set, which Sakkari eventually ended up winning, it was just a nerve fest, error strewn, and whoever could just handle it, quite honestly. Well, what was your take from it? You've obviously said at the outset that you thought Sakkari would reach that stage and reach the semi-finals. But given what happened in match two for Sabalenka, did you think maybe we might see another turn of events in this particular match?
Yeah, I did actually. I thought Sabalenka might carry that momentum that she'd found in the second match against Świątek into this one. She had a very good head-to-head record against Sakkari coming into this. I think she'd won all four of their matches, including a couple of absolute thrashings in their most recent meetings. But it feels like one step forward, two steps back for Sabalenka, to be honest, this tournament. She really got it together against Świątek, and this match was a mess, really, wasn't it, from her? I mean, she served for the first set. As you said, she lost it. She had a set point, didn't take it. She hit multiple double faults in the tie break and lost that first set. She then served for the second set twice and got broken both times. Eventually won it in a tie break. And just when you think she's got the momentum going into the deciding set, and she's up a break, in fact, in the deciding set, she hits 10 double faults in that third set. 19 in the match altogether.
Just 19?
Just all over the place with her serve. And it was a sort of familiar tale, really, for her. She's got the game. She absolutely has the game. She's in a winning position. She just cannot keep it together in these sort of high-pressure situations. And Sakkari, we spoke about the other day, being at her most dangerous, I think, when she's behind in the score. And the way the match unfolded kind of suited her, I suppose, because she was behind. She then had these real spurts in the match where she got back into it. And just in the end, that was enough to sort of take her over the line. So, yeah, I suppose I was a bit surprised that Sabalenka didn't finish it off, considering she was in that position. But then history tells us that Sabalenka can do that.
Yeah. Oh, well, it was great scenes at the end, though, I think, for Sakkari. I always find myself drawn to her when she's either struggling or whether she's getting over the line. She just, because she lets you in, she doesn't leave anything hidden in terms of how she's feeling about things. And I end up really feeling her emotions and pain and suffering and then joy when she manages to succeed. And she came into the press comments afterwards, really, really good, interesting press comments. And she was kind of asked about the progress she's made and the fact that she's amongst these eight players now and that she's in this company and that she's been, you know, if you think back, she was a point away from the French Open final. And that really hurt her at the time. And she admitted that the stress just got to her too much in the moment. And she thinks she'd be better next time. Then she came and had a good run at the US Open. And here she is in the final eight. And now she's made the semi-finals of this big tournament, the WTA finals. And that can get to people, can't it? Some people can get imposter syndrome and feel like they just don't belong in this company. And she she made a point of that. She said, I'm getting more used to it. I'm getting more used to the fact that I sort of belong here amongst these players. Just by playing them more often, it's becoming more second nature to me. And the other thing I found very interesting, an answer about her fitness, and she didn't describe fitness as just something that you need as a base position in order to be a competitive tennis player. She talked about it as a weapon. She talked about it as, she says, I'm not trying to be big-headed, but I think I am probably one of the fittest players on the tour. And the other players know that I can keep going, and that if it's 3, 4, 5 hours, I'll still be there. And to be honest, I think it can be quite intimidating for them, she said. And I find that a really great analysis of what I think is the case. And a great way of looking at it from her perspective.
Yeah, totally. That's certainly how I view it for Sakkari. You know, if a match is deep and physical, and I back Sakkari because of that. And it's cool to know that she backs herself and that she probably thinks that, yeah, it can intimidate other players. I was also reading about Paola Badosa, who we've obviously talked about a lot this year, having made a lot of improvements. I think we spoke the other day about the sort of mental improvements she's made. I was reading an article on El País in Spanish, where she's been working with a guy called David Antona, who's a Spanish high jump champion. And they've been working together for about a year. And he said that she's really improved physically, and how that can feed into your mental state. You know, sort of if you've got confidence in your physical capability onto court, that just makes you feel better on the court, gives you confidence in yourself. And I think we've seen that with Badosa a lot this year. I think we see it with Sakkari as well, with her physical ability. I'm sure Larry Stefanke said something similar in your interview with him about the sort of importance of being physically strong and taking that onto the court. That's something he really worked on with all of his players. And, you know, in Badosa's case, this guy, David Antona, said he thinks that she's at about 25% of her potential, just because they've only been doing it for a year. You know, if she keeps working at this level for a few more years, she's going to be even better. So, and I think Sakkari is probably right at the peak now. She is what I sort of view as the absolute top in women's tennis. And I think it's great that she talks like that and has that confidence in herself.
And it's big, this particular win, because she lost her last four matches against Sabalenka. And I'd seen a couple of those. And I think particularly because Sakkari these days wants to impose herself on a player, she was ending up rushed against the sheer velocity of shot coming towards her by Sabalenka. She didn't have time to exert herself. Well, she managed that this time. And there's a couple of, Anki Ottavong in commentary pointed this out, that there's a great camera angle that they're using just occasionally, proper court level behind one of the players. And when you were behind Sakkari, you saw just how much ground she was having to cover and at what pace and what reaction speed she required in order to deal with the shots coming at her from Sabalenka. Another absolutely capacity crowd, great atmosphere. Guadalajara, just a fantastic success in terms of image and experience and the way it's coming across, I think.
Oh, I think so. Exactly the vibes you want for the sort of, well, it's the showpiece event of the WTA Tour, really, isn't it?
You want people to look like they're so chuffed to be there, and that it counts and it matters and that this is a big deal. And that's what it is.
Yeah. Oh, completely. And I think it's been great that it's not just been the Muguruza matches where that has happened. I think those are the ones that have really stood out. She put on a Mexico shirt after she'd beaten Kontaveit, and the crowd were chanting her name. And, you know, she's obviously spoken about how at home she feels there and sort of in tune with her surroundings. But every night session match, it's been like that. And actually, as you pointed out, over the weekend, it was like that for the day session as well. So really, really good, I think.
Mm. Yeah, agreed. So that means we have semifinals, which are actually today, aren't they? Tonight, as we talk to you right now. And we're going to have, in the afternoon session, it's going to be Garbiñe Muguruza up against Paola Badosa, and then the night session is Anett Kontaveit against Maria Sakkari. Ooh, fascinating, isn't it? I mean, Badosa against Muguruza, who's the crowd going for in that?
Yeah, I mean, I think they'll be with Muguruza, but it's fascinating, isn't it? There's this real connection between both players, obviously both Spanish, but also both born in the Americas, Badosa in New York and Muguruza in Venezuela. They both, I think, developed their tennis in Barcelona, and then here they are playing the finals in Mexico, and sort of there's this feeling, I think, among the Spanish press that they're sort of following in the footsteps of Conchita Martinez and anxious for Cario, who were sort of at so many events in tandem together. And I think Badosa has spoken about Muguruza leading the way for this sort of modern generation of Spanish players, but also being burdened by being called the next Muguruza when she won Roland Garros Juniors, I think, in 2015. So dealing with that expectation was not easy. It guarantees Spain a first finalist here since Arantxa Sánchez Vicario, and that was 1993, the year Muguruza was born. So it's just all these sort of wonderful connections. I think the crowd probably just will be pulling for Muguruza, but I can't back out of my prediction now, and I think Badosa gets it done.
Okay, then, soothsayer. What about Contaveit against Sakkari? Who's winning that? Because, I mean, they've played a lot. I think this is the first meeting for Badosa and Muguruza, but it's the 12th meeting between Contaveit and Sakkari. And Sakkari was saying, we've been playing each other since juniors as well. I mean, we came all the way through futures, juniors, and it's 6-5 to Sakkari. I mean, it's quite a head-to-head, that.
Yeah, and I think one of the interesting parts of it is Not many of the matches have been close. You know, they've always pretty much always been straight sets, I think, for one player. Gosh. Sakkari?
Based on?
I mean, she clearly feels fine in the matchup. She leads the head-to-head.
Contaveit's a new player now.
She is. I'm swayed by this idea of momentum. And
I agree.
Contaveit having hers curtailed with that match against Muguruza, and Sakkari carrying in the momentum from last night. And she's got to recover physically, but everything we've just spoken about, I back her to do that.
Yeah.
And also night session, I don't think Contaveit liked those conditions, whereas Sakkari, I think, got used to them as the match went on.
Got an extra day, hasn't she, Contaveit, the way things play out, because she's in the other group. But I think that's the factor that strikes me. I saw Dmitry Tursunov, her coach, just in the corner, in the shadows, watching Sabalenka and Sakkari. He probably didn't really want Sabalenka to know too much about him being there, because they used to be a coaching player thing, didn't they? But I just feel like she was really getting frustrated, Contaveit, in that match. I didn't watch all of it, but I saw she was just sort of unable to understand why her shots were missing. And I think when you've been on a run like that, there must be that feeling that, well, this has got to come to an end sometime. That's what I'll be thinking. Okay, you know, I've won 20 in a row, you know. I mean, this isn't going to last forever, is it? And, I wonder whether that just maybe rattled her, jarred her a bit. But I would go for Sakkari as well, and I would go for, I've said Badosa will win the whole thing. So, yeah.
We're in agreement, David.
Who'd have thought it?
So guaranteed Muguruza Contaveit final.
I'm just sticking with you now that you just get things like that newsletter right. By the way, the next newsletter will be going out after the WTA finals has concluded. So we'll get our ATP finals predictions in sort of, I guess we'll be in final group stage match time at that point when the newsletter goes out. But in our show notes, you'll find the newsletter link if you want to sign up. And yeah, you can get that every single week. And Matt will just tell you exactly what's going to happen at every single stage of the tennis year. He's shaking his head. Right, what about the doubles semi-finals? We've got Barbora Krejcikova, who somehow has gone all the way from the Billie Jean King Cup to Mexico and has managed to get through to the semi-finals and yet to lose a match alongside Katerina Siniaková, up against Nicole Melikar and Demi Schuur. And then the other semi-final is Shea Su Wei and Elise Mertens against Aoyama and Shibahara, who are in the semi-finals as well.
Yes, that's the top four seeds, in fact. So right. The singles is, I think, seeds 4 and then 6, 7, and 8. It's sort of the lower half of the seeds, and the doubles is the complete opposite. It's the top four.
No, so I think that's going to be a heck of a lineup in the semifinals for the doubles. So we'll keep a good close eye on that as well. And we will bring to you what happens in our post-WTA finals show on Thursday morning. We'll wrap up all the semis and the finals in our show on Thursday morning UK time. That's when we're planning to record it in a couple of days' time.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
As I said, we are having to also keep an eye on what's going on in the ATP finals. So basically, Matt and I are watching tennis around the clock, apart from the 7 hours sleep that we try to get of a night time. Let's be honest, could be worse. Not the worst way to spend your time. Catherine, incidentally, is spending about 14 hours a day in a TV studio. Also not the worst thing in the world to be doing. And a splendid job she's doing as well. She's watching and covering the ATP finals in Turin. First impressions, Matt, what do you think of the event, its staging, the way the matches have gone so far? We've had all the first group stage matches, haven't we?
Yeah, I think the crowds have been really good, haven't they? I think it's about 60% capacity that they're allowed, but it seems that they're absolutely at that. I mean, they've been really impressive crowds, and the matches have been okay. You know, I think we'll get onto them in more detail. My initial impression was I was a bit disappointed when I saw it for the first time, just because it looked and felt exactly the same as London. And I was hoping that they would use this opportunity to refresh and revitalize the event a little bit more. I'm, you know, selfishly, I loved having it in London, of course, but I'm definitely of the opinion that this event should move around. And I think you should embrace that it moves around and add a bit of local flavour to it. You know, London looked different to Shanghai, which looked different to Houston, which looked different to Lisbon, etc., etc. I can understand why they would want to take the best elements from London, you know, and in many ways, I suppose it's good that they're not too proud to recognise that that was a success. And they've copied other elements as well, haven't they, with the two sessions and everything. But I don't know, even the fact that they're still playing heroes after each victory. I mean, that felt out of date in London about 5 years ago. And yet they've just carried on with it in Italy. I just think a little bit more thought and imagination into making it feel like a new venue would have been cool.
David Bowie, out of date.
I mean, I love the guy. Love the song. Please don't come at me, but...
Oh, thought I'd better say it. yeah, I know what you mean. I suppose there's a branding element to it, isn't
yeah.
there? You know, this tournament is meant to have a brand and a look. That's what they've managed to create in London, moving on from the years when it was in New York at Madison Square Garden and then in Frankfurt, in Hanover, and it was enormously successful in Germany there. And then it moved through... I think it changed hands too many times when it went to Lisbon and then Houston and then where else? Sydney for a year, and then it was in Shanghai. I didn't think that was a vintage period, although I loved it when it was in Lisbon for the 1 year. I remember the atmosphere there was just extraordinary. But what it did in London is it established itself again, like in the old Germany and New York days. And I suppose I can understand why they would want to just recreate the brand and have you turn on the TV and know exactly what the event is. But I do feel that, yeah, I'd like to see some more local feel to it. And I dare say that they will build on that. And part of it is to run the event and get feedback, do the market research and see what people thought.
Yeah, and the final year of London was a bit different to the first year, wasn't it? You know, they changed the times of the matches because that was an issue in the first year with fans missing the last tube home or whatever. So I'm no doubt they will make some tweaks and improvements. But yeah, I mean, that was just my initial impression watching it. I was expecting it to feel a bit different, and it just felt like they'd plonk exactly the same thing just in Turin.
Including the O2. The stadium feels exactly and looks exactly the same. But anyway, I mean, it is a spectacular sight still. Match-wise, we've had four of them, and Medvedev has beaten Hurkacz 6-7, 6-3, 6-4. It took Medvedev a little while to get to grips with things, and I think Hurkacz played exceptionally well in that first set. But then, I don't know, I slightly got the sense that he suddenly thought, oh, where am I? Look at this. I'm at the ATP Finals. Medvedev just took over. And then we had a really sad sight with Matteo Berrettini being forced to retire after the most spellbinding set of tennis against Alexander Zverev, when they really butted heads, and the atmosphere was incredible for Berrettini. It took me back, actually, to the first time I ever went to the Foro Italico in Rome. And ironically, it was Berrettini's coach, Santapadre. What's his first name? Is it Vincenzo Santapadre? Who was playing on an outside court. And you could hear him at the other end of the entire site. You know, when he won a point, it was like somebody scored a goal in the World Cup final every point. And by the way, I went to Vincenzo Santapadre's restaurant. I think his dad owns a restaurant in Rome. And oh my word, that's one of the best restaurants I'd ever been to. Anyway, side note, Berrettini, the noise when he was winning points was incredible. And Zverev's points won were greeted with silence. So that was quite comical as a stark difference. But then after Zverev won that first set, Berrettini quite quickly strained an abdominal muscle of some kind. I don't think he's not actually pulled out the event yet, has he? But I mean, he's not going to be able to play, surely. Not
surely
with an abdominal strain. I mean, he did that in, if you remember, at the start of the year, didn't he? When he'd had that great win over Khachanov. And then he in the third set of that, he pulled his stomach muscle and he managed to get through the match, but he couldn't play his next one.
He was out for months, wasn't he? I think he didn't. That was in the Australian Open. I think he returned in April. I cannot see how he plays. I mean, obviously the silver lining for the event is that Jannik Sinner is the first alternate, so there would be another Italian coming in. But it's a massive shame for Berrettini, and he was crushed in his press conference, wasn't he? He called it, I think, the worst day he's ever had on court. And, you know, it had the potential to be one of the absolute best in that atmosphere. He was playing really well in the first set, so a massive, massive shame for him and also for the event. I think one of the differences to London, actually, that sort of a subtle difference but makes a difference in the matches, is the court speed being really quite fast. And I thought that was a factor in the Hurkacz-Medvedev match. There weren't many rallies. There wasn't that much jeopardy, I suppose, in the match. I don't think Medvedev faced a break point. I think he converted the only two he had. And look, I quite like a fast hard court. I think generally I quite enjoy it, but some interesting comments from Medvedev afterwards saying that he felt actually it would be more enjoyable if the court was a bit slower, because you would get longer rallies.
He's never happy, is he?
I do wonder whether that's just, you know, he would prefer it being a bit slower. You know, we saw how good he is in somewhere like Paris, where it's slow. But, you know, I do think we're not going to be short of rallies this tournament. You know, they move so well, they defend so well. I think that was a matchup thing, Medvedev-Hurkacz. I'm not sure we're going to get that many other times. We're not going to be starved of rallies. And I think if it does encourage players to use some variety, come forward, then I'm here for a slightly faster hard court.
He was complaining about Paris being too slow.
Was he?
Yeah. He said he can't hit winners. Oh, jeez. Anyway, so he's beaten Hurkacz. We've had Novak Djokovic beating Casper Ruud 7-6, 6-2 yesterday. And actually, Djokovic was a breakdown in that first set. It was quite a good tussle for a while. And Andre Rublev then last night beat Stefanos Tsitsipas 6-4, 6-4. Got to think that there's a chance that Cameron Norrie may end up coming in for Tsitsipas. Tsitsipas didn't look right to me.
No. And he was asked about it in his press conference and he said, I don't want to talk about that, thank you. Which
suggests elbow, isn't it?
Elbow problem. And he said he's had this little issue for a couple of years that he's sort of been managing and it flared up in Paris. I don't see any way how just, you know, 10 days or so is going to have magically made that better. I still think he looked hampered. I thought Rublev was awesome, to be honest. I mean, his biggest weakness is probably his second serve, Rublev. And he just eradicated that by basically not hitting one throughout the entire match. His serving was ridiculous. I think he got 19 of his first 20 first serves in. And they were, you know, proper first serves. And he was able to rush Tsitsipas. He was able to exploit the little weaknesses in Tsitsipas's return and on that backhand. Yeah, I thought it was one of his best matches I've seen, actually, from Rublev, albeit against a hampered Tsitsipas. And then there were these great quotes from Rublev afterwards about his nap. Did you see this?
No.
He said in Russian, I think, that he'd fallen asleep before the match, and he was asked about it again in English. And he said, very funny answer in his press conference. He said, yeah, my match was at 9 p.m. So during the day, I had a lot of time and I decided to sleep. Normally, I don't sleep during the day, but I put my alarm for 6 p.m. And when I woke up, it was dark. He said, I felt completely broken, like if someone wakes you up at 7 a.m. And he said, I feel strange. And normally I put my phone on to charge and they weren't charging. So I was thinking something strange. He was completely dazed at 6 p.m. He said, I woke up 6 p.m. How is this possible? And then I realized, oh, I've fallen asleep during the day. I have a match in a couple of hours and I need to wake up. So, you know, if Catherine were here, she would want us to point out naps work because Rublev played one of the best matches I think he's played all year after being out of it just a couple of hours before he was even meant to step on court.
Wow.
Very, very Rublev.
Imagine, Matt, if this is the moment, this moment that Rublev has discovered naps, imagine if this is the moment that propels him to greatness as previously unforeseen.
I know, we've been talking about he needs to develop a slice, he needs to come to the net. Actually, he just needs a nap.
He's upped his napping game and he's become a multiple Grand Slam champion and world number one. And he's left everybody in his wake. Reason, naps. Right, okay, so today we've got Daniil Medvedev up against Alexander Zverev and we've got Hubert Hurkacz up against, we assume, Jannik Sinner, but it's supposed to be Matteo Berrettini as things stand. So we'll keep an eye on it all and then bring you up to date when we record our next show on Thursday morning, UK time. In the doubles, we've got Nikola Mektic and Mate Pavic beating Kravets and Takao 6-4, 6-4, just carrying on doing what they're doing. They're trying to win their 10th title of the season. Only the Bryan brothers have done that this century in men's doubles. I mean, they are a proper team and they just keep on bringing it, don't they? I mean, these fast conditions, I do think, make it very difficult to break serve. Generally, you see a lot of these. I mean, still some fantastic rallies, though. I've really enjoyed some of the doubles that I've seen. In that group as well, Marcel Granollers and Horacio Zubias. Oh dear, Filip Polasek and Ivan Dodig. The big moment of them trying to get back together. And they led 6-4, 4-1 and had four match points and didn't win.
That feels like the worst possible scenario for a team that's already fallen out to lose from that position. I mean, I think they only see each other on the match court in Turin.
Yeah, I mean, do they have one conversation between that match ending and this next one beginning? Not sure.
No.
Anyway, so Grenoise and Zabias won. In the all kind of all British battle between Joe Salisbury and his partner Rajiv Ram and Jamie Murray and Bruno Suarez, 6-1, 7-6, and then it just says the word aggro.
Yeah, unexpected.
What happened?
Aggro.
I didn't see the aggro.
There was a moment where Joe Salisbury thought that that a hindrance should have been called on Jamie Murray. In fact, it was aggro. It was between the two Brits.
Oh, now we're talking. I missed this. I was picking up a new windscreen wiper at the time, Matt. So let me know all about it.
Thrilling.
We were talking about Halfords the other day, weren't
we?
With Catherine.
Yeah.
So there I was, and I missed the best bit. Go on.
Basically, Jamie Murray hit what he thought was a winner and sort of shouted, "Come on!" And sort of just as he shouted it, Salisbury got a racket on the ball. And he thought that that should have been a hindrance call, but the umpire wasn't having any of it and said, "No, it's not a hindrance. You wouldn't have got the ball back anyway. Carry on." But he was pretty annoyed for a little bit there, Joe Salisbury. And yeah, it was Jamie Murray's call that had caused the little friction.
Did Jamie blank him, or was there any sort of?
I think they're okay. You know, I think they're okay because Salisbury ended up winning. I think if Salisbury had lost and he hadn't had this call go his way, I think he probably would have been more vexed about it. But sadly, on the aggro front, it died down.
Oh well, something. And in the final group match, there was Pierre Hugabert and Nicolas Mahut beating Cabal and Farah 7-6, 6-4. So that's your doubles update from the ATP finals. Now, we should also update you on the news we were discussing a couple of days ago and the story written about Peng Shuai of China, who you may remember that really disturbing report with the allegations that she had made and the fact that she'd suddenly become censored and there was concern, frankly, about her whereabouts. Well, later that day, a statement was released by Steve Simon, the WTA chairman and CEO, in relation to Peng Shuai, and this is what it said. "The recent events in China concerning a WTA player, Peng Shuai, are of deep concern. As an organization dedicated to women, we remain committed to the principles we were founded on: equality, opportunity, and respect. Peng Shuai and all women deserve to be heard, not censored. Her accusation about the conduct of a former Chinese leader involving a sexual assault must be treated with the utmost seriousness. In all societies, the behaviour she alleges that took place needs to be investigated, not condoned or ignored. We commend Peng Shuai for her remarkable courage and strength in coming forward. Women around the world are finding their voices so injustices can be corrected. We expect this issue to be handled properly, meaning the allegations must be investigated fully, fairly, transparently, and without censorship. Our absolute and unwavering priority is the health and safety of our players. We are speaking out so that justice can be done." That was then followed by a statement from Andrea Gaudenzi, the ATP's chairman, basically backing up what the WTA chairman and CEO Steve Simon had said. But actually, Steve Simon went further in an interview with Chris Clary in the New York Times. This was really, really quite something. And also, happily, some news on the whereabouts of Peng Shuai, although we remain concerned to some degree, I have to say. But listen, this is what Chris Clary reported and what Steve Simon said to him. "We've received confirmation from several sources, including the Chinese Tennis Association, that she is safe and not under any physical threat." But he said that nobody associated with the WTA Tour, including officials and active players, and Peng Shuai would know many active players, nobody had been able to reach her directly to confirm her status. "My understanding," Steve Simon said, "is that she is in Beijing in China, but I can't confirm that because I haven't spoken directly with her." He said the tour was prepared to return to China next year, but the tour has had to survive without China over these last two seasons, and he acknowledged that Peng's case had created not just concern, but uncertainty. If at the end of the day we don't see the appropriate results from this, we would be prepared to take that step and not operate our business in China if that's what it came to. Now, first of all, Matt, I'm obviously pleased and I don't want to say reassured about Peng Shui just because of the nature of the fact that they haven't been able to speak to her directly. I'm pleased that he's saying that she is safe and well. Let's hope that's the case. But there does remain concern because who knows whether those sources are accurate and reliable. But, you know, we'll hope for the best on that. On the subject of doing business in China, the WTA are so involved and the relationship is ingrained supposedly for the next, well, 8 more years with Shenzhen for the WTA finals. That's where they're supposed to be playing this event right now that they're playing in Guadalajara. Obviously, the pandemic has got in the way of that. They played 1 year of it. And the prize money was a record amount. It was $14 million prize fund for the event. Ash Barty took home $4.4 million in that event. That was viewed as an enormous moment for women's sport, for the game, for the fact that women were basically out earning the men because the WTA finals was worth more at that time than the ATP finals. In Guadalajara, the entire singles prize pot for all 8 players is worth less than Ash Barty took home 2 years ago. It's $4 million for the whole field, and the winner will take home $1.6 million rather than $4.5 million. So there's a massive difference, and obviously we are hugely positive and optimistic because we're seeing these great crowds. But business-wise, this is a very different scenario. I mean, I don't know what to think about what the sport should do completely because that the money is a factor. But I would certainly rather them follow the crowds generally. I think players, those top 8 players, would probably be prepared to earn less in order to get a great crowd. How much less, I don't know. But big moment for the tour's boss. To stand up and absolutely 100% agree with him on taking this stand and saying and coming out and saying we're not standing for this. He actually said in an interview I heard on Prime Video, there's only one way and that's the right way to handle this.
I was really impressed with that statement considering the ties. You know, it's the WTA finals for the next 8 years. There's also, I think, more tour events in China than in any other country on the WTA. Their ties to that country are so strong. And obviously, money is important and it talks. You know, we celebrated the fact two years ago that Ash Barty was getting that much money, that the prize money was so big. As Billie Jean King says, the money is the message that is important. But is it as important as doing the right thing? I don't think so. And look, I agree with you. I think if there are big concerns about holding events in China, especially at the moment, and if that means getting out of there and following the crowds, going to somewhere like Guadalajara, I would support that. And I think, you know, I think John Wertheim made the point in his column that they might take a sort of short-term hit, but long-term, that will be really strong for the WTA. That will send a really good message that they're doing the right thing and that they've got backbone as an organisation.
Mm-hmm. And also, the landscape is different to what it was 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. When Turin was announced as the next venue for the ATP Finals in April 2019, they were showing off about the fact that they were going to get $14.5 million, which was $500,000 more than the Women's Tennis Association finals were going to get. And in actual fact, they've got half of that for this particular edition. We all understand why. The world and the economy has suffered, and tennis has been part of that suffering. But, you know, the days maybe of earning those sort of amounts from these events maybe are over, or at least off the agenda for a while. So, yeah, I think this is a significant moment. And again, let's just hope Peng Shui is okay and that absolutely an investigation can take place and she can be heard. Now, just a couple of final points before we finish for another edition of the Tennis Podcast. Judy Murray's been in touch with us and she has asked this morning if I could just let you all know about the Love All auction that is currently taking place for charity. And I mean, frankly, if Judy Murray comes calling, we listen because we think she's marvellous anyway, and just about every way in all she does for this sport and has done. But this auction that she has put together is incredible. They've got 130 lots of tennis memorabilia and VIP experiences, and these are the sort of things that they've got going on. Tickets and behind-the-scenes tours at Wimbledon, Queens, Edgbaston and Eastbourne. There are tennis lessons with the great doubles coach Louis Kaye and with Judy herself and with Anne Kiothavong. They've got two night stays at Andy Murray's Cromlech's Hotel. They've got a Zoom call with Billie Jean King. They've got signed rackets and kit from Naomi Osaka, Emma Raducanu, Leighton Hewitt, Andy Murray, Jamie Murray, Belinda Bencic, Coco Gauff. They've got some great artwork that's been specially created for the auction. So it really is something else, this auction. If you like that kind of thing, if you want to have a great experience or some memorabilia, some merchandise that you couldn't possibly get anywhere else, go to loveallauction.com. So that's Judy's auction. And we have our executive producer, Chris Albert-Lee, very much a top bloke. We've got Billie Jean King sponsoring Billie Jean the dog. We've got Zeus, Catherine's sponsor, the lovely dog. We've got Rogue, who's mine. We've got Scousel Mousel, who's Matt's. Scousel Mousel, very proud of Matt at the moment. And we've got a shout out, Matt.
We do, for Lucy Carrington.
All right, Lucy. The Carringtons, they used to be a family in Dynasty, the American soap opera, where Blake Carrington was the lead character. I wonder whether Linda knows anything about that.
Well, I don't.
Well, of course you don't, because it took place at least 10 years before you were born, Matt. But there were some amazing hairstyles and people wore shoulder pads inside their dresses. There you go, Matt. YouTube's the place for you. Find out all about that. we've also got a mascot for this week. And I'm looking at a picture of this cat's beautiful eyes. Lyra, nearly 2 years old, was a rescue, owned by Emma. Lyra, Emma, thank you so much for being our mascot for the week.
Yes, and those eyes will be visible in the newsletter this week. We'll have a bit more information about Lyra and one of those gorgeous pictures.
Magnificent. Right then. Okay. Well, we've got to go and watch some tennis because it's about to start again. Hope you get a chance to watch plenty of it too. Hope we've whetted your appetite for what's to come. We'll be back in a couple of days' time with another edition of the Tennis Podcast. Do tell your friends if you think somebody you know might like to listen. We'll speak to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.